Hello and welcome to the podcast, the In Key Podcast with James and guest.
Hey, and I guess I'm the guest, Kent Crawley.
That's right. And today we're going to be talking about singing and playing your instrument, not just playing it, as well as working with a band to create something musical where everyone is contributing, how to shoot content or just shooting content the way Kent does, and maybe a little bit about his upbringing.
Yeah, man, I'm excited to get into this.
Kent, thank you for coming on. I see your guitar playing, and it reminds me a little bit of, and I'm terrible with his name, Frank Gambelli. A little bit of like the smoothness of the picking. It reminds me of, man, there's so many players that have this way about the way they pick and how smooth they jump between notes. And that gets me excited because it's somewhere in between alternate and economy picking. But you seem to have the benefits of both. But for me, I get the costs of both. I feel like I got to practice two and then think about which one I'm using. So I've always seen your picking as really natural. And the way you play, it comes from the heart. You enjoy the music you're playing. And that's what inspired me to reach out to you. And we talked a little bit before this. And the thing that kind of got me excited to talk to you is you said you had an interesting upbringing. And something that I see in a lot of musicians is that they're, especially ones that have really good relative pitch, their playing comes naturally, they have a natural love for music, is they're exposed to a lot of different music at a young age. So you kind of said you started playing at 13, right?
Yeah, I started playing at 13. I spent a whole summer mowing my neighbor's lawns, 10 bucks a pop, you know, and finally it was like, and I had always wanted to be a guitar player. When I was 5, I was like, hey mom, I want to play guitar. And she was like, well, nobody in our family plays, so you probably won't be any good at it. You know, it's one of those like, no, maybe later. And finally, I kept that in the back of my brain. So right before middle school, I spent that whole summer mowing lawns. And I was like, hey, I got money for this. And all right, well, I'll take you to get your guitar. But you have to pay for half of your lessons.
Aww.
Okay. So like treated me some responsibility with that. You know, I paid for half my, I maybe had 6 months worth of lessons in the first 2 years.
Which guitar was it, by the way, your first one?
My first guitar was an Epiphone Les Paul 100, and it was a Sunburst.
Nice.
One of those bolt-on ones. And back then, it was like maybe one out of a batch of like 10 was an actual like good resonant one, and I got lucky with that.
Wow. Yeah. And the frets weren't bad? No cuts in the end?
Nope, the frets weren't bad. The guys, this is, look, I'm from Flint, Michigan.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, it was a Guitar Center, but it was like a smaller, like, you know, all the guys were local guys, and they were pretty cool guys. They wouldn't, you know, try to, well, you know, just sell. One of the techs there actually fret dressed it and everything me.
Thank goodness.
They gave us like a good discount on like the setup and everything. So it was a good setup before I even started playing it.
That's huge. That's really, really huge a lot of times. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, if anyone's listening out there and you get a bad guitar, just, hey, experiment with different strings and picks. I'm sure you get it. So,
exactly.
So now, I wanted to bring up that you had your father, while he wasn't a musician, you said he had a good ear and he had a lot of music to listen to. Did you have access to that? You said a wall of CDs and pretty well.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And it's always still growing. That's, you know, another one of his children. But yeah, even before I was born, he's one of the few of his generation that prefers CDs to, you know, LPs, you know, the big, pretty much just because they're harder to take care of. The CDs are a lot easier to take care of and keep in order. But I like to call that collection Abba to Zappa. Even though it doesn't start with A's, it starts with numerical first and then goes into A. But it's alphabetized.
And I like that, by the way. That's really cool. That's a great name.
Yeah.
For it.
Abba to Zappa. Abba to Zappa, man. And it's all that, too. Like, very eclectic man, my father, and I was very lucky with that. So, and for instance, it's alphabetized, but say you go to ABBA, it's not like any order in ABBA. It's ABBA, their first release to their last release in chronological order. So whenever something would go missing, he'd know exactly what it was.
Nice.
And he'd be like, where you got it?
Yeah.
You know, wait, oh, Black Sabbath is gone, where you got it? Mm-hmm. You know, like. And I'd be pulling all these different things out. So I grew up listening to stuff from like the Flying Burrito Brothers to the Beatles to my dad is a very and me as well. George Clinton, anything that man touched. So Parliament Funkadelic, you know, The Brides of Funkenstein, like all of the small projects, Prince, Jimi Hendrix, Robert Johnson, John Coltrane. I was listening to you know, classic country, classic rock, R&B, funk, soul, anything you could shake a stick at, we were listening to.
A lot of that has guitar in it. Was there anything that was kind of experimental that, you know, like noise projects or, you know, EDM? So,
yeah. Oh, man.
Because, you know, it's funny. I went into a CD shop once and I said, I just need something different, man. I need something with keyboards in it. And in fact, keyboards and no guitar. And I told that to the guy, and I forget, I wish I could remember the band, but it was kind of like an old school, had a lot of 80s synthesizers in it, but it felt like a very different style of like a Lady Gaga song.
You know, maybe like Blue Monday or bands like that too. You know, any of like the 80s synth pop bands, there was stuff in there too. So, but it's like, as an adult now, a lot of this stuff is a blur. So it's interesting when I quote unquote discover a band, but I remember hearing that tune as a kid.
Yeah.
Because you can't remember. I can't remember all of that music like that.
Maybe that's the next video for you. You can do like A through Z and do like a few videos. Like, hey, here's a band through all the alphabet. Check the next part.
Exactly.
Especially someone like you would be qualified for that. But remembering it's tough. And then, so did you? What was the first song you learned on guitar then?
First song I learned on guitar
that you remember at least.
No. So there's two technically. So leading up to buying my first guitar, I had a neighborhood friend that had guitars. He had guitars, plural. And, that was around the time that the American Idiot album came out by Green Day. And he wanted somebody to play rhythm guitar for him. So power chords were super easy. And I already had like solid rhythm. So I was playing rhythm guitar for him to play these solos over, to practice over, you know, and I think, man,
I think Holiday
was the first one, or like Brains 2 or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Da-da.
You know, we're jamming Da-da. On that. Yeah. But then I like to also say my first song that I learned entirely was Smoke on the Water.
And not just the riff that da da da.
No, I learned, man, my instructor, that was like the first full month of playing. It wasn't that, because I got the riff down and everything. It wasn't that, and I got the verses down, but I wanted the solo.
Yeah.
Like, Ritchie Blackmore is a very big influence on me.
Yeah.
You know, that whole album, Machine Head, just threw me for a loop as a kid, and that came at the right time. And I was like, man, I really want this. And I just remember, you sure you want to keep going on this song? I'm like, yeah. And the thing that always got me was this lick. I don't know if you mind.
It might come up. Go for it.
All right. So it was like, and I can still play this note for note. All right.
Oh, yeah.
So let's see. Let's see if I can still pull it off.
I can hear the background and everything as it's changing, and
yeah,
it's actually kind of cool hearing it without the rest. Some of the mm-hmm. note choices, like what was he doing, man? There's something. I meant drugs, but yeah, where? How did you come up with that? You know, like
and it's interesting how he looked at that, because he had that classical thing and the blues thing at the same time, and you can hear he was playing the chord changes, because the backing for that for most of the solo is G minor.
Yep. The verse.
The lick that always got me, though, for like 2 weeks, I was like, man, how is he doing the... That threw me for a loop, and it was getting, that was the beginning of getting my picking done.
Oh yeah, we all have that one song that's all of a sudden like, I gotta think about this, because this isn't gonna happen with me just trying harder.
Well, at the same time, I had a very, very good first instructor. His name is Tim Taylor. He's still up in Michigan. And he was very like, oh, okay, well, this is the rudiment behind this. He would be like, okay, yeah, you want to learn the song, but he could tell I was like, why does this work? Not right. Just how does it work?
And this is you at 13?
Yeah, this is when I was 13. Sheesh. I was a weird kid.
Man. You're asking the right questions, man.
Yeah, I was like, well, he's like, well, this scale. And I was like, okay, well, then what happens when I go to this position? And I was like, oh, well, it changes the tone because of the thickness of the string.
It's mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So, like all these different things like that. And he introduced me to economy picking literally the first month of playing. He gave me the C major scale, three notes per string.
What kind of player was he? Was he like a shredder type? Was he more like a classic rock guy going out of a book? Or?
But like most Michigan players, you'll find this. A lot of the people that do like the wedding band stuff or like teach private lessons like that, you have to be multifaceted to make money. So like he could do any like the Brent Mason type stuff all the way to, you know, the rock stuff, the blues stuff, some jazz stuff. He's very like multifaceted. Jack of all trades.
Oh yeah.
All
right. Well then, so you got this song down and you just played it for us beautifully, by the way. That's very nice.
Thank you.
And it's cool hearing those things. You started asking the right questions. Where do you feel you finally got to roughly where you're at now? For me, it was about 2.5 years where all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I'm doing some things, man. I'm playing. Like, this isn't fun anymore. This is pretty serious. I'm not honestly, not fun, like, but, you know, it's like, you know, now I'm thinking about this every day, and it feels like I'm, you know, I have to work for my wins now. Because, you know, when you're starting, every other day, all of a sudden, you've epiphany, you know. And
something
your hands,
new.
Yeah, and your hands are catching up to your mind. And then eventually, at least for me, it seemed like now it's like, okay, now I have weekly goals. Like, I really want to get this there. I'll see that probably in a week, not in a day or two.
I say right now, cause there's always, you know, I'm 30 now, there's always new stuff to learn. Wise man knows he knows nothing. So I'm always trying to find that new information, trying to find that new way of teaching something or learning something. But I'd say like technique wise, by the time I was 16, I had like all the technique that
there
I would
is,
use
yeah,
in
like
my
that
lifetime.
2.5-3 year thing. That's
2.5-3 year thing. But musically, though, that's been over the span I'd say COVID actually really helped me out.
Yeah, yeah.
With
saying
that.
It's you and your music.
Yep.
Is that when you kind of got? I shouldn't assume this. I imagine you started singing probably pretty early. I imagine this teacher who's killing it with you probably said something pretty early on about, hey, you should sing and play.
He didn't actually.
Okay.
In a way, it was more like. So I started playing at this local club in Flint called the Golden Leaf when I was about 19.
Okay.
And like when
just
you're playing
you
at those
full band.
No. So I was sitting in with this house band and I grew up playing predominantly with black musicians, you know. That was actually kind of how I started to get my ear very quickly was maybe about that 2 years in, I started playing at like predominantly black churches in the area because they needed a guitar player and I got thrown into it and learning how to play behind a preacher, learning how to you know, oh, hey, we didn't learn this song. We got to play it. You got to learn what the chord progressions are. You need to learn how to fit into a band when you have an organ player, a keyboard player, a bass player, another keyboard player, and then a
keyboards.
Full choir.
Yeah.
Without
stepping on anybody's toes.
Exactly.
When you are an instrument that is in the mid-range.
Exactly. And so that was always an interesting thing, finding the sonic space where you fit.
Right.
And then the moments where it's like, oh, if we're all in the same sonic space, that's going to sound big.
Yeah.
Versus when we need to spread apart and be in different, you know, EQ spectrums.
My cheat code for that has always been, okay, if I don't know what to do now, I am now a percussive instrument.
Precisely.
I am not even hitting notes and maybe one or two root bass notes. And I, as I'm hearing it, you know, I'm very conservative when it comes to those things.
I learned very quickly. It's like, okay, triads and dyads are my best friend.
Yep.
And so I learned all those pretty quickly. And then learning the songs and learning like, okay, instead of going like, all right, we're in D major. Now I have to play this bar chord, then this bar chord. It's like, oh no, I can go.
Yeah. And you stay and in go that to the kind nearest, of sonic space. So you
exactly.
Yeah. Nice.
Inversions.
So they probably said like, hey man, be nice if you also sang too.
It. Yeah. When I was like, around there, because I sang. I've always sung. That's another thing. I started choir when I was in middle school too, mostly because of girls. but I've always sang, and even when I was like growing up, I would sing before I could play guitar. I'd have there's a picture of me as a toddler. I had an old like I had a vacuum in front of me as a microphone.
Nice,
and I had. Like a rake as a guitar, and I was singing Beatles tunes. I know I was singing Beatles tunes because I remember it. You know, I'd sing "Love, Love Me Do." You know, I wanted to be Paul McCartney as a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and not realizing he played bass left-handed, but it was just like the Beatles were huge for me.
That's funny because I've never told people about this online, but I was in the talent show and I did an air guitar performance before I even considered playing real guitar.
Nice.
Kind of funny. So I don't know, late bloomer with the air guitar.
Nothing wrong with that. Hey, I played Guitar Hero before I played guitar.
Ah, see, that's funny. For me, that was after. But so you started singing early on, but at one point you're like, you know what? I got to do both at the same time.
I needed
time.
To put it together. Yeah. And it was like maybe like I was 17, 18, 19. I got into jazz more.
Yeah.
And of course, one of the biggest jazz guitarists is George Benson.
Oh yeah, huge.
And hearing on Broadway, and it wasn't necessarily that. It was just like, oh, I started doing the singing thing as a practice routine. I would sing my like any of my like scale exercises or any of my like choir exercises. The do do re do da 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 da. I'm like, oh, I need to put this on guitar. So it was like a thing of I was singing and playing them at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I realized like. Oh, this is actually kind of cool. I can, and then I heard George Benson. I was like, "Oh, this makes so much sense now." And I'd start doing that, and it became kind of a parlor trick in a weird way because mm-hmm. when you're performing, it's like, "Oh, people are really gonna dig this." It's just like playing with your teeth or throwing the guitar behind your head.
Yeah,
any of those tricks that you do live, it's like, "Oh, that's something I can throw in there." And so I started doing that because I would sing like. Any of these R&B tunes, and then it would be like, okay, your turn to solo. I'm like, oh, okay. And I'd sit in the mic, and I would do call and response with the guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so say we're here, like. Something like that, cool? Mm-hmm. And I'd be like. And then I'd sing with it.
Yeah, yeah.
So just different, exploring different things like that. I started doing that when I was like around that time, 19 going into 20. And I found that it actually connects your auditory memory and your muscle memory so much closer than what people realize. I highly recommend it to any of my students, anybody that's out there. It's like, man, I'm playing all these like scales and like exercises, but I don't feel connected when I improvise, you know, just, and it's a very tough thing. Record yourself.
Yeah.
You're going
to be prepared to cringe, but it's okay.
Yeah, oh, it's so,
oh yeah.
You're going to cringe and cringe and cringe. But I urge people to do this, listen to it and don't listen for the stuff that makes you cringe. Learn from those things, but separate into, oh, hey, I like this thing. Be your, you don't have to be your own worst critic. You have to be your biggest fan. Find the things that you liked and nurture those things. And then the stuff that you didn't like, you can either choose to go, okay, why didn't I like this? How can I improve on it? Or, hey, that's not going to serve me in this moment right now. I need to focus on this good thing.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It's true because like you can't get rid of your frets when you're playing. But if you think about it in the way of a singer, because you don't have any, there's no bumps unless you have auto tune on. There's no bumps to your voice as you're moving through something. So it's kind of allows you to float over that percussive nature of the guitar. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just adding that huge, huge, huge thing. I kind of did it super late because I got into singing during COVID. And then I was like, wait a sec, I can combine these two. And, you know, that can really help with coming up with awesome melodies. Yeah. But so I imagine that also helped you with melodies. And, you know, then when was the first time you recorded yourself on an album at all? Like, where you're like, okay, this is going out to real people. This isn't just me jamming or at a band or at a church, you know, a performance that maybe someone records. I want something audibly done that is going out to the public.
Well, so I, man.
Because I had this terrible album that no one knows about, which I will never release. But I took it seriously and I grew a lot from it. But it was not intended to be for a band. It was just I wanted something on a recording with my name on it.
I guess so. We can get into this in a sec. But really, the first recordings I ever did, it was doing studio work for people.
That's you still.
It does. But it was one of those like, oh, they need guitar. Okay, cool. Like, hey, can you come up with a part for this? Or say I'd get called in after another guitar player to kind of, they had like good ideas, but they needed them kind of zhuzhed up a little bit. It'd be things like that. So I'm on a few different gospel records that I don't even know about. Because what would happen was when I'd go to the studio, they would either pay me per track or they'd pay me like an hour. Like once it got past like 3 or 4 hours worth of work, it'd be like an hourly rate because I could get stuff done. You know, rather than, hey, we're going to pay for 5 tracks. Can you come in for like 5-6 hours and get maybe like 8-10 tracks done? Yeah, no problem. You know? And so it was always kind of an efficiency thing. So there's a lot of different things. And what's funny is hearing stuff that's like, man, I remember this very distinctly when I was like maybe 23, 24. And this is maybe a couple of years after I got into recording with people. And I'm sitting there, man, I'm listening to like an R&B, local R&B radio station. And they're like, this local artist. I'm like, oh, cool. Man, that guitar part's cool, man. Oh, wait, that's me.
Yeah, that's awesome, man.
I was like, oh, okay, cool.
What are the chances? That's neat.
Yeah.
It is a surreal experience when you hear your guitar playing on the radio for the first time. And especially since you can't go back and listen to it again. It's that one stream that you listen to and you're like, whoa. You know, unless you find the website and go back and listen to it again. But that's something really cool and surreal to hear it on the radio.
Yeah. Well, this is at the beginning of like guitar audio processors and stuff like too. But what, you know, producers and you know, the people that were, you know, engineering were notorious for, hey, just plug direct into the system. Oh, okay. And then, you know, a dry guitar into a DAW is, it's gross without any compression, because you can get some good like,
and sometimes the preamp of that system, it'll smooth it out a little,
but no preamp.
Yeah.
Like nothing. It was just like I had to come up with interesting stuff and like what I was playing. And then afterwards you'd hear it and be like, oh, they'd put all this like audio processing on it. And then all the nice stuff. And it'd be like, oh, that sounds great.
Would have been nice if I could hear some kind of simulation.
Yeah. Like, the one thing I drew the line at was when people would be like, all right, we needed to do a solo. All right. I'm bringing my amp in and my pedals. Dude, like, and I'm not going to sit there and try to do, you know, all that stuff.
You can't feel it. It just doesn't. No.
But, I'd say now it's like the past during COVID, actually, I recorded with a buddy of mine back home. He had his first two albums on it. I'm on his first two albums.
Was it like an every track thing, too?
I was on. So his first release, I was on 3 out of the 6. His name's Caleb Robinson. He's a drummer. He's insane. Jazz drummer. I was on more of like the fusion tracks. And then his second release, I was on all of them except one, because it was more of an R&B type feel album. And I actually wrote one of the tunes with him. They already had like a chord backing, just didn't have anything yet. And I wrote a melody just on spot based on the chords and arranged it with them. And that was kind of the first time I ever really got like a writing credit.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, laser. Sorry. If nobody can see us, but
the quotes, the air quotes. Yeah.
Yeah. The air quotes. And that felt good. And I've always wanted to do that too. And I got very lucky with a lot of the different people I've played over the years. They've always just been like, just do you. We'll tell you when it's too much.
Right. Yeah. No, that's really supportive and helpful. And then you kind of, once you have that, then you have this hunger for something that's beyond just playing well and just being good. It's like, I want to be good on a recording or with a group. And now you're doing both. You said there's something coming up. We didn't do this during the promo. That September 8th, your album's coming out with a band, right?
Yeah. So
what was the band name again? Or what's it going to come out of? How do we search for it?
So we actually have our first single out right now. Okay. The band is called Gratuitous Mr. Mayo. But if you search on Bandcamp or any of your streaming platforms, look for Mr. Mayo. And the first single is called Ponder.
Nice.
And if anybody can tell me what time signature it is, you know, I might send you a cookie. I don't know. We'll see. But the full entire album release will be September the 8th. And we've actually got, it's a 6-song EP. We've got 2 separate songs that we recorded of our keyboard players that he wrote beforehand on a different project. We just re-recorded them with him. His name's Matt Twaddle. They're called the Twaddle Sessions. So if you search Mr. Mayo on July 5th, those 2 songs are going to be released as kind of a teaser. But September the 8th, our full album will be released on all the streaming platforms, as well as Bandcamp, if you guys want to buy the album.
Nice. And that's honestly, guys, go to Bandcamp, support it. It's the best option that we have in music today. But before I get into any of that, because we've only got so much time here, I wanted to ask you specifically about, like, is this your project? Is the band's project? How long has it been going? Because I'm finding this, especially for a more advanced music or music that is sonically, you know, going a lot of different places, it's harder and harder to find people to do this sort of thing.
So it is a collective. It's a full band project. There's no like one greater piece than the other. A lot of these things, it started off as like, I started coming down to Nashville, just to visit, and I met the drummer of the band, and he checked on my Instagram. He's like, dude, who are you? Like, you like Alan Holdsworth? And we both love Alan Holdsworth. I'd love for you, when you come down, we can jam on some Holdsworth tunes. Great. And I had met our bass player around the same time as well. And then I finally moved down here. And within my first, I was going to like every jam and whatever. And I went to the straight ahead jam where my bass player, Leland, was playing. And our keyboard player, Matt, was also in the house band. And I was in awe of his playing. I was like, man, this guy sounds like all of my favorite keyboard players, like McCoy Tyner, Chick Corea. He's got like all these influences. I can hear him clear as day. And we talked, and he's like, oh yeah, I like playing fusion music too. I'm like, oh, this is too perfect. I'm like,
yeah.
I'm like, our drummer Jake, I've been wanting to get together this project together, like a fusion quartet. And I got the perfect drummer. I'm like, we need to get Leland. There's no bass player that will fit this. It's gotta be Leland. And we put it together, and we started just jamming. Put together a Spotify list of a bunch of tunes. We learned a bunch of tunes and arranged them. And it was evident at that first rehearsal, it was like, oh, we're doing arrangements of these tunes. We're not even just playing the tunes.
Nice.
It was great. And I have ADHD, if it isn't obvious.
I personally think all jazz guys do, but that might limit my guests, and I might cut that out. But everybody is great. I think I'll do that. But anyway, but that helps, so, right? With you know, not getting bored of a certain track, at least.
Yeah. Well, and so what happens is a lot of the time during, and that's how the name came about. It was like, oh, we need to be called Mr. Mayo. The gratuitous part came from all of our different personalities. And what happens is during our rehearsals or our writing sessions is, we'll come up with an idea, or I'll come up with something. Someone will come up with something. And we'll go on that for a minute. And I'll be like, wait, I got an idea. What if we did this? And our bass player, he'll go, the first time he said this, he goes, Oh, that's gratuitous.
Like that tone. And I was like,
that's our band name.
There we go.
It's gratuitous, Mr. Mayo.
Yeah.
And so I'm so thankful for these guys because they always, you know, there's no, oh, well, we can't do that.
Right.
It's how can we do that? All right. Yeah. Let's try and write this down if we need to, or let's figure out how to add it to the arrangement. That's how most of the tunes on this album came about.
Yeah.
Was like out of the six, four of them were like in our, you know, getting ready for other gigs. We were like jamming on stuff. And then we tightened them up over the process when we went in to record them. Two of them, that's one of the tunes on the album I did write. It was more of a ballad because it was like, oh, this album needs a ballad that sings more because, you know, jazz fusion albums can be very bing, 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 doo, doo, doo,
almost exactly like that. That's exactly how I would describe it, too.
Yeah.
A lot. Gratuitous, obviously.
Yeah. And then
to slow it down is cool, kind of cool that you were able to make that happen with the band then.
Yeah. And it's definitely a band situation.
What's the average length of a song for you guys?
All right. On album or live?
Album. Yeah, because obviously live, you're doing the jazz thing where you're jumping in and out. You know, you're doing your solo parts, you know.
Yeah. Album, anywhere from like 4 to 8 to 12 minutes long.
Nice.
We had one tune that was like open form that we just jammed on the record that was kind of laid back, funky. And that's like 10, 11 minutes long. The shorter tune on the record is like 4 minutes long just because it's more like kind of like Giant Steps changes. So, and it's at pretty fast BPM. It's like, it's like ridiculous.
Nice.
Our bass player wrote that one and he brought it in and we all fleshed it out. That's what happens. Somebody brings in an idea and it's like, okay, we trust each other on our instruments enough to be like, oh, hey, you're going to come up with a good part. Or if there's like something specific we need, there's no egos behind it. It's like, hey, I'm hearing this. Can you do this more of this? It's like, yeah, sure. And that's been the beauty of it. Nobody, there's nothing negative or nothing wrong with being like, hey, can I get this for this tune? Or like, have you tried this? Or sometimes, you know, there will be a little bit of a resistance.
Yeah.
You know,
well, a lot of times there's even that awkwardness of like, well, we don't know what the best option is right now. They both kind of sound cool.
Exactly. But then what's cool is it plays itself out in the arrangements.
Yeah.
You know, and it's been a total blessing because, again, as you said before, it's like we live in a world where it's definitely very singular artist kind of mentality nowadays. Yes. And then collaborations with maybe one person or. I'm sure we've all seen the Shred collab videos.
Yeah, where it's kind of like, okay, nice hanging out. Now we're not going to talk for 5 years.
Yeah,
or exactly. Whatever. Or if it's just like a quick flash of something that, I'm glad you guys are making music that's like you can sit and live with it a little bit. I think anything over 2 minutes, that's where I consider like you can sit and live with it. It's less of a product and more of an experience and more of a connection you can have with your band, with the people listening. You know, you start to grow something there, and I think that's what we need more of, and it's tough. Ken, I think that you have the most bright days of your music ahead of you by far. You are speed running the perfect musicianship. You have the, I started young, but even before that, I was singing and listening to a lot of different types of music. You know, I got into a live act that demanded things of me. You know, I'm trying my very best to be great, but also I just freaking love playing guitar, you know? And I had a good guitar to start with, and now you're telling me you got a band that is, you know, technically good, emotionally supportive and collaborative and consistent. Dude, you know, I don't know what to tell you. I'm going to take lessons from you to see if I can get some of that luck to rub it off on me. That is amazing and a recipe for great things to come in the future. I'd like to talk to you again sometime. I mean, that your story is awesome and I can't believe I'm getting to talk to you now. I think things are going to blow up for you. At the very least, you're going to inspire a lot more people to play guitar and do music in general, because I mean, you've got all the flavors that you need for like awesome future. You could do anything.
Thanks, man.
Rock and roll. Kent, what do you have to promote to the world? What can you give us that is more value than just what I've been yapping to you about in the last five minutes or so?
Well, as you know, I am an online teacher. So if you visit my website, kentcrawleymusic.com, there you can find multi different things that will be useful for you. Like I have multiple courses that you can sign up for. And I also have an ebook out right now on chromaticism that you can check out. Nice. And it's all, like I said, it's all at kentcrawleymusic.com.
Simple enough. Well, we'll go to your Instagram, find your name, click on the links, and we'll be signing up, learning about chromaticism.
Yes, sir.
Well, I think that's all the time we have. Kent, thank you so much for being on the podcast. As I always ask, did you enjoy being on the podcast?
Man, I had such a good time. I appreciate you for reaching out.
Fantastic. And I hope to have someone else on in 2 weeks or whenever the editor, who looks a lot like me, gets this episode edited. Until then, that's all the time we have for now. So, bye.
Bye.